so today let's talk about Neiros Shabbos a little bit. We're discussing Inyan relating to Shabbos, so we're talking about Neiros Shabbos. There is a minhag, there is a practice that a lot of people, minhag, maybe a halacha, we'll have to discuss. What happens if a person forgets to light Neiros Shabbos? A woman forgets to light Neiros Shabbos, one Shabbos, just forgets entirely. Anyone familiar with this? One less?
One more.
Close, yeah, one more. You light one more every Shabbos for the rest of her life, which seems kind of harsh, right? She forgets once, and every Shabbos for the rest of her life, she lights an extra candle. In fact, I once saw in the Sefer, the how many Shabbos candles does your mother light in the house? Five. Is it possible that you have two siblings? Yes, good guess. So your mother lights five candles, one for mommy, one for daddy, one for Menachem, I'm just going to guess, one for Hannah, one for Daniela, right? So five candles for the five people. So I'm able to do that. I'm able to look at a person's eyes and predict their entire family's names. Anyone have a different minhag? Oh, so the classic minhag was to light only two candles. Why two? So it's not for mommy and daddy, right? It's not like, oh, we care about mommy and daddy, but once we're taken care of, we don't worry about the children. It's for Shomer and Zachar. There are two mitzvahs of Shabbos in the Torah, two mitzvahs min haTorah of Shabbos, and two mitzvahs min Divrei Kabbalah, two mitzvahs in the Navi of Shabbos. The two mitzvahs min haTorah of Shabbos are Shomer and Zachar. Where do those words appear? In Aseres Dibros, right? In two versions of Aseres Dibros, in Parshas Yisrael, Zachar Yom Shabbos Kacho, and Parshas Veschanan, Shomer Yom Shabbos Kacho. Those are the two mitzvahs Torah. So what do they mean? How do you remember? What is Zachar Yom Shabbos? Good. Shomer is the Lo Saseis, not to do Malacha. Zachar is Kiddush, Havdalah, potentially other things also, but at the very basic level, Kiddush, for sure, is Zachar Yom Shabbos Kacho. So those are the two mitzvahs Torah of Shabbos. Parenthetically, and not really so parenthetically, because it's very relevant, what are the two mitzvahs Midivrei Kabbalah of Shabbos? Oneg and Kavod, right. Oneg Shabbos and Kavod Shabbos. So now, I once saw in a Sefer that the suggestion of why, how did the minhag develop that people light an extra candle for each child? Meaning, one for Shomer, one for Zachar. Maybe you could throw in two more, one for Kavod, one for Oneg or something. But where in the world did we get, and by the way, what's the source of that? That one for Shomer, one for Zachar, that we dafka use two things. Who says you're supposed to have two things, one for Shomer, one for Zachar? It's very symbolic. It doesn't say that in the Torah, that you need two candles, one for Shomer, one for Zachar. It's a Gemara that you all know, probably. Shabbos Daf Lamed Gimel. Oh, right? Well, what are you talking about? Shabbos Daf Lamed Gimel, the Rabbi Rasner has a good mnemonic for this. I think the world has accepted this mnemonic. The Lag BaOmer Gemara is Shabbos Daf Lamed Gimel. There is no Gemara about Lag BaOmer, really, because the Gemara never heard of Lag BaOmer. The Lag BaOmer came later. But as a day of celebration, it does not record it anywhere in the Gemara. But the story most associated with Lag BaOmer is in Shabbos Daf Lamed Gimel. What? Rashbi in the cave. Rav Shimon Bar Yochai in the cave. That was with Rabbi Lazar. That is Shabbos Daf Lamed Gimel. And what happens when they come out of the cave? Right, so he's burning everything with his eyes, right? So you got to go back in the cave and calm down a little bit, right? You got to go in the freezer a little bit. So they go back in the cave and calm down a little bit. And what makes him stop burning things with his eyes? He sees an old man running with two hadassim. And he says, what are those hadassim for? Why do you have two hadassim? He says, they're l'kavod Shabbos, one keneged Shomer and one keneged Zachar. So we see in that Gemara, you see the idea that there's one for each, one for Shomer and one for Zachar. So that's what we do with candles. Where did the idea come from to light one for each child in the family? The first two aren't for mommy and daddy. They're for Shomer and Zachar. So why would you light one for each child? Where does that come from? So I once saw a suggestion in a Sefer. I don't think this is true, but it's an interesting suggestion. That since we have a halacha that we'll hopefully talk about, maybe today, maybe not, that if a woman forgets Neiros Shabbos, that she lights an extra candle every Shabbos for the rest of her life. If she misses Neiros Shabbos, she lights an extra candle every Shabbos for the rest of her life. And it used to be that when a woman would have a baby, she'd be out for a while. She'd be totally out of commission for a while. So much so that the halacha is in Shulchan Aruch, that if a woman has a baby, and then within 72 hours, Yom Kippur arrives, what's the halacha? She's not allowed to fast. She must eat. Because she's considered a chola sheyesh bo sakana. It's considered dangerous for her to fast. She must eat. That's the halacha in Shulchan Aruch. So it's a question whether we pass them that way. So most poskim still hold that way. Rav Shechter very much does not hold that way. Rav Shechter has a very good point. The woman is released from the hospital like 12 hours later sometimes, especially during Corona. They weren't even keeping them overnight. It was crazy. They were released from the hospital. At most, the next day, they're released from the hospital, unless something went really traumatic in the childbirth. You know, in a normal delivery, they're released from the hospital 24 hours later. 48 hours later, they're in Gourmet Glot. You know, they're shopping. 72 hours, otherwise, you could probably chop what Gourmet Glot means. 72 hours later, they're in the gym in their step class or in their Zumba class or whatever. Like, meaning, you're going to tell me that that's the Chol HaSheyesh B'Sakana? She doesn't look like a Chol HaSheyesh B'Sakana. She looks like she's in much better shape than her husband, right? That's called Chol HaSheyesh B'Sakana. That's a hard sell. But so that's where Shachter is not so into the idea that 72 hours still is an automatic that you must. But it used to be that for 72 hours you're not allowed to fast, and for a week, for 7 days after having the baby, you're allowed not to fast. Not that you're not allowed to, but you're allowed not to fast. You're allowed to eat if you feel like you need to eat. The woman is allowed to eat it, which meant for a week she was totally out of it, which meant in all likelihood the first Shabbos after having a baby, she probably missed lighting Shabbos candles. So it's not for the baby that she's lighting the extra candles, it's for the missed Shabbos candles that she's lighting the extra candle for the rest of her life. That was the suggestion. I saw it in a sefer called Likras Shabbos, I think is the name of the sefer, all about Hadlakas Nero Shabbos. He made that suggestion. I don't think it's true. It would chop a huge nafkamina, right? What if a person has triplets? How many candles do you light? Okay, if it really knocked her out to the point where she missed 3 times. But it would be enough kamina, right? I mean, she only missed one Shabbos for 3 babies. So do you light 3 candles for each of the babies? Or do you light? I think if a woman is not well, we'll soon see, probably if she's not well and therefore unable to light Shabbos candles, probably she does not light an extra candle. Right. Even minhagim very often reveal to us a lot about the halacha, the idea of the mitzvah. Rav Shachter always told us, Rav Soloveitchik used to spend hours and hours in shir trying to explain every minhag Yisrael, trying to show how every minhag is a kiyum of something or another. He was very into minhag. Rav Shachter always points out that Rav Moshe Feinstein and Rav Soloveitchik are often misunderstood. They're often misidentified in terms of their character and their, not character, but in terms of like their unique contribution. For example, what do they call Rav Soloveitchik? What do people call him? The Rav. They call him the Rav, right? Or Rav Yashaber, but they call him the Rav. In the YU, they call him the Rav. What do they call Rav Moshe and MTJ? In the Lower East Side. Anyway, if you even listen to Rav Moshe's children, unfortunately Rav Moshe only has one child that's still alive, who will be here on Thursday, by the way, Rav Reuven Feinstein, they don't call him Rav Moshe. In the MTJ, they call him Rav Shiva. Rav Moshe was always known as Rav Shiva, and Rav Soloveitchik was always known as the Rav. Which is strange, because Rav Moshe had a little yeshiva, MTJ, it's not Lakewood, you know, it's not like 6,000 people there. He had a little yeshiva, he said shir to a few people, but his main role in Klal Yisrael, he was the Rav for Klal Yisrael. He paskened all the shaylas for Klal Yisrael. Rav Soloveitchik paskened shaylas, certainly, but his main role was that he was the Rosh Yeshiva that taught generations of Rabbanim and Talmid Chacham, and he was a Magid Shir of the highest caliber. That was his unique koach. So, like, they were mislabeled. So one of the ways that... So that Rav Soloveitchik pointed out, that he always thought that it was strange that people called him the Rav and called Rav Moshe the Rosh Shiva. I think Rav Reuven Feinstein himself also pointed this out, that it's funny that people, like... You know, they were cousins, Rav Moshe and Rav Soloveitchik. How is a good question. Rav Soloveitchik's mother, I believe, was a first cousin of Rav Moshe. I think they were first cousins once removed. I'm not sure about that. I always get confused because I remember that Rav Soloveitchik's mother's father was Rav Elia Prozhner, Rav Elia Feinstein. Rav Soloveitchik had two grandfathers. Rav Chaim Soloveitchik, who's very, very well known, and his other grandfather was also a huge Talmud Chacham. Rav Elia Prozhiner from Prozhan his real name was Rav Elia Feinstein. His last name was Feinstein. Not through him. I think his wife was also Feinstein. I think it's through her that Rav Soloveitchik was Rav Soloveitchik's mother was a first cousin with Rav Moshe. In fact, the story goes that Rav Soloveitchik found out that Rav Moshe passed away. Rav Soloveitchik was very old already when Rav Moshe passed away. Not really so old by modern standards, but he was already in decline, in severe decline at that point in his life. He was, I don't know, 82, 83. So nowadays you have people that are 82, 83 running half marathons. But, you know, like, he was already in declining health. And they didn't want to tell him that Rav Moshe died, because they thought it would be too heartbreaking for him. You have to realize, the whole world turns to Rav Moshe for Piskei Halacha. It wasn't like, oh, you have this rabbi, we have that. Rav Moshe was the final word. Everyone turned to Rav Moshe. He was undoubtedly the greatest posek of his time, or generations prior, meaning he was like 200 years out of his time. He was like beyond comprehension, just the level of it. So when he died, Klal Yisrael felt very lost, and certainly those that were closest to him. So they were afraid to tell Rav Soloveitchik that Rav Moshe died. So obviously it was an obituary on the front page of the New York Times, and Rav Soloveitchik read the New York Times every day. So they had the shamash hide the New York Times and say, "Oh, the paper wasn't delivered today," you know, things like that. And then he died on Tainus Esther. I remember I was a little boy, and we were supposed to have a Purim Chagiga in South Shore, where I went to school that day, and then we got a phone call in the morning. We were all dressed up. My brother was in his army uniform, and I don't know, we were all ready to go, and then we got a call that Moshe Feinstein died, and the Chagiga was canceled. At the time, I didn't really fully understand who Moshe Feinstein was, but I was not happy with him. But in retrospect, it was the right call by the yeshiva, but they were afraid to tell Rav Soloveitchik. So the shamash was driving Rav Soloveitchik somewhere like a month later, before Pesach, driving him to the airport to go back to Boston. And Rav Soloveitchik turns to, it must have been Rabbi Brander who was taking care of him. I don't know, there are a few others. It could have been Rabbi Wienerker, it could have been, I don't know who it was exactly. But Rav Soloveitchik turned to the shamash and said, "How come you didn't tell me about Rav Moshe?" And like, he felt like, is there somewhere to hide? Like, he's driving a car. Like, he said, "How did you know?" He said, "Well, every Erev Yantif, Rav Moshe and I take turns calling each other to wish a good Yantif. So I called, it's Erev Pesach. So week before Pesach, I called and I asked Rav Moshe. And they told me." So that's how he found out that Rav Moshe died. So anyway, that's interesting story. But where was I? No, Rav Moshe and Rabbi Yaakov died the same year. Rabbi Yaakov Kamenetsky, a month apart from each other. Soloveitchik died when I was in 10th grade, when I was mature enough to understand that inherently was a bad thing. And, you know, Soloveitchik died in Chol HaMoed Pesach when I was in 10th grade. Although I had no idea who he was at the time, because growing up, I never really heard his name. Because you know, I grew up in the yeshiva that was not so much in the modern Orthodox world, and they never spoke. I heard lots of stories about Rav Moshe and Rabbi Yaakov and the Stipler, and you know, I never heard the name of Soloveitchik. I didn't even know who it was. When I was in 10th grade, I switched into MTA for 10th grade, and my Rebbe was Rabbi Yisrael Kamenetsky. Some of you may know him. He was his first year teaching. And he kept on quoting this guy. He kept on quoting Rav Soloveitchik and Rav Schechter, two names I never heard before. And I conflated them. I thought they were the same person. I didn't realize that they were different people. So when in 11th grade, MTA had a shiur with Rav Schechter, I'm like, didn't he die last year? I didn't even realize that they were different people. So Rav Soloveitchik passed away when I was in 10th grade. Baruch Hashem, Rav Schechter is learning with the entire youth of modern Orthodoxy and in Beit Shemesh this summer, Bechavrusa. Why would I bring this up? What were we talking about Rav Moshe for? Oh, yeah, thank you. So Rav Shechter often points out that everyone thinks that Rav Moshe was like a traditionalist, you know, an old school kind of rabbi. And Rav Soloveitchik, everything was new and, you know, modern and, you know, like innovative. And so the opposite is true. And their styles of learning, the opposite of Soloveitchik, a little more clean cut with the goatee, you know, different parts of his life. And Rav Moshe certainly looked like an old school rabbi. But in terms of their styles of learning, Rav Moshe's tshuvas, every tshuvas, not every tshuva, but a lot of tshuvas are like these crazy chidushim, these wild chidushim that go against years of precedent, but he's Rav Moshe. He's allowed to do it, so you can argue with Rav Akiva Eiger and the Chassam Sofer and whatever, and he does all the time. Rav Soloveitchik was very traditional in his Derech HaPsak. He was just like reading what it said in the Magen Avraham and explaining every minhag, and he would spend hours explaining every minhag Yisrael, not trying to innovate, to do things differently. No. That's not entirely true. He definitely paskined based on the Gemara, but clearly with absolute knowledge of the major Rishonim, Shulchan Aruch, and all its Nosei Kelim on the Shulchan Aruch, the Magen Avraham, the Taz, the Shach, you know, the Prima Gadim. He knew Prima Gadim Bal Peh, which is wild. I don't know if you've ever even seen a Prima Gadim. You open up to the back of the Shulchan Aruch, the really tiny letters that go on for pages and pages and pages. That's a, you know, a Prima Gadim is a commentary on the commentaries on the Shulchan Aruch. And it's way, way longer than the commentaries themselves, obviously. So, and teeny tiny letters in the back of the Shulchan Aruch. Rav Moshe knew Prima Gadim Bal Peh. So he didn't use very many achronim. When it came to Tshuva Sfarim, he looked at a Chassam Sofer, a Neid Yehuda, you know, Rav Shlomo Kluger, you know, some basics. But in general, in fact, I gave a series of shiurim this year called Rav Moshe Feinstein and his Halachic Adversaries. And each month, I took a different gadol who disagreed with Rav Moshe about something and discussed who that gadol was and the issue that they disagreed about, or one of the issues that they disagreed about. So what you find in almost all of his contemporaries that they all quote him all the time. He never quotes them. Not because he doesn't respect them. That just wasn't his style of psak. He looked at a few achronim, and then he developed his own opinion. It was about what he felt based on his learning the sugya, and that was it. He wasn't trying to uncover every achron. That you open up Rav Avadia Yosef side by side with Rav Moshe Feinstein. It's like two different religions almost. Rav Avadia Yosef it's all precedent. It's all about the, you know, hundreds of svarim that they. Rav Avadia Yosef quantitatively knew more Torah than anyone in the history of humankind, right? Because every year thousands of svarim are published, and he would consume all of them. And once they were in, they didn't come out. They were just in his head. And it all comes out on the page in his tshuvas. Rav Moshe had a much more analytical. Rav Moshe is much more analytical and much more limited in the types of svarim that he would use in developing his psak halacha. So very different from each other. But because of that, Rav Moshe was very innovative. He wasn't always looking at what every achron said. Whereas Rav Soloveitchik also wasn't looking at what every achron said, but he Rav Shech said he would work for hours and hours just to explain each and every minhag Yisrael. So that's a long way to answer your question of if it's a minhag, who cares? So yeah, we still care even though it's a minhag, and there's still what to look into. Back to us, right? So what were we talking about? Shabbos. So we said we're going to talk about Neiru Shabbos. Neiru Shabbos. So there's a minhag to light two Neiru Shabbos, there's a minhag to light as many as you have children in the family, or as many Shabbosos as you may have missed. Maybe we'll get to that, probably not today. Why do we light Neiru Shabbos? What's the purpose of the mitzvah of Neiru Shabbos? Says the Rambam in the fifth paragraph of Hilchos Shabbos. Hadlakas Ner B'Shabbos, Eina Rishus, Imratza Madlik, Imratza Eina Madlik. It's not like an optional thing where you can just choose yeah or nah. No, you just choose to do it or not to do it. No, that's not what Hadlakas Ner Shabbos is, which is a little bit strange. Why does he have to tell us that? Meaning, is there any mitzvah that's a rishus, that imratza imeina ratza? What does the word mitzvah mean? Commandment, right? In other streams of Judaism, meaning non-Orthodox streams of Judaism, they typically translate the word mitzvah inaccurately, I think purposely. They translate mitzvah as good deed. That is not what the word mitzvah means. But if the whole concept of commandment is anathema to everything that you live for and believe in, so, because you can't be commanded, I have freedom of choice, I can do whatever I want. there are good deeds that I can do and feel close to God and that are meaningful to me. And those that aren't meaningful to me, I won't do. And that's like your whole hashkafas hachaim. So you can't translate the word mitzvah to mean commandment, because there's nothing that you're actually commanded to do. But we believe that a mitzvah means commandment. You're absolutely obligated to do. So the Rambam is telling me, oh, guess what? Neiru Shabbos, not optional. Of course it's not optional. Nothing in this religion is optional. Is there such a... There's a big discussion in the acronym if there's such a concept of a mitzvah sarashos. Is there anything that's optional? Any mitzvah that's optional in this, in our religion? Some significant poskim hold that, yes, there are certain mitzvahs that are mitzvahs kiyumis, that you fulfill a mitzvah if you do it, but you don't have to actually do it. Moving to Eretz Yisrael according to Rav Moshe. The Rambam doesn't count it as a mitzvah, but it's not that he holds that it's optional. He probably holds that it's a mitzvah. I mean, maybe. Where Rav Moshe understands Rambam. Giving a get, you have to do if you want to get divorced. Meaning, it's a situational mitzvah. Hopefully you're not in the situation where you're going to, you know, need to do it, but if you're in the situation, then like there's no other way to get divorced, right? That's the only way to do it, and you're obligated to do it at that time. You know, like you would not say, "I want to fulfill every one of the Tarryag mitzvahs or as many as I can, so I'm going to marry a girl I don't like, so that I could then fulfill the mitzvah of giving a get." That would be a spectacularly bad idea. So we try to avoid those situations if we can. But Rav Moshe Feinstein writes in the Tshuva, and it's a great chiddush, and a lot of people weren't happy about it, that Yishuv Eretz Yisrael b'zman hazeh is a mitzvah kiyumis. Do you get credit for moving to Eretz Yisrael? Yes. Do you have to move to Eretz Yisrael? No. Rav Moshe did visit Eretz Yisrael once, but I don't think, but not often. He did not visit often, and he certainly didn't live there. He lived in the Lower East Side. The tzitzis is also chiyuvis if you have, it's just situational. When you're wearing a beggar of dal kanfos, you must have tzitzis. What? Yeah. Now, we try to put ourselves in that situation when it comes to tzitzis. We do not try to put ourselves in the situation when it comes to other things, like a get, for example. But this is even more than that. This is not a situational mitzvah. Living in Eretz Yisrael is, everybody's got to do it, right? So Rav Moshe says, nah, it's optional. So that's a big chiddush to say that there's such a thing as an optional mitzvah, because after all, the word mitzvah means command. I wanted to actually give one part of the series that I was doing, Rav Moshe Feinstein's Halachic Adversaries, on that tshuva, but I was having a hard time finding someone in writing who wrote a tshuva that explicitly argued with Rav Moshe. In fact, I assumed everyone argued with Rav Moshe, and therefore, when I gave a shiur about Rav Soloveitchik and Rav Moshe, I just mentioned, yeah, Rav Soloveitchik obviously disagreed with this and held that it's an obligation. And then someone showed me that Rav Schechter writes in Nefesh HaRav that Rav Soloveitchik agreed that it's a mitzvah kiyumis to live in Eretz Yisrael. He agreed to Rav Moshe. So, but there are a lot of people that disagree. But I had a hard time finding anyone who actually wrote a tshuva on the record that was a Bal Madrega to be in the same stratosphere as Rav Moshe. No one was quite Rav Moshe, obviously, but you know, to be in the same, like someone on the level of like a Rav Eliashiv, Rav Shlomo Zalman, you know, someone on that Madrega, to be in that, in, you know, in the conversation with Rav Moshe that wrote a tshuva that argued. There are a lot of people that wrote things that say that it's an absolute obligation, but I couldn't find, maybe someone will send me a suggestion or something, I don't know, or if any of you know, of like someone of that Madrega that argues. Okay, you know. It's not a machlokes Rav Moshe the Ramban. Rav Moshe was not in the habit of arguing with Ramban. So there is that possibility. There's another possibility of mitzvah kiyumis, matzah and Pesach, right? First night, absolute obligation. Asher kidushan mitzvos v'tzivanu al achilas matzah. And what about the rest of Pesach? Eat matzah the rest of Pesach? Is it mitzvah drabanan? It says for 7 days in the Torah you're supposed to eat matzah. So what does it mean when the Torah tells me to eat matzah for 7 days? It means not to eat chametz. It means that you have to have bread, but your bread can't be bread. So your bread's got to be matzah. So pasha pshat is that it's not a mitzvah at all. It's just what else are you going to eat? So you're eating matzah pizza and matzah this and matzah lasagna and matzah, you know, like everything is just with matzah in it. It's like, that's just because that's all there is to eat. But the Gra is quoted as saying in Maaseh Rav that it's a mitzvah kiyumis to eat matzah the rest of Pesach. There are Rishonim that indicate this way as well. There's a mitzvah kiyumis the rest of it. So the first thing that Rambam starts with is the mitzvah of Hadlakas Neir Shabbos is not a rishus. You have to do it. It's not a mitzvah that you don't have to try too hard, like Netilas Yadayim L'Achila. You don't have to go to great distances to find water for Netilas Yadayim. You do have to do that for Neir Shabbos, the Rambam says. Ela chova. And whose obligation is it? Man or woman? Man and woman. Even if you don't have what to eat, you go and beg and find, scrounge together enough to buy a candle so that you can have Neir Shabbos. Shezeh b'chal Onek Shabbos. Because that's the mitzvah of Onek Shabbos. Which is amazing, like the level of poverty that's being described. You don't have what to eat. Right? We're not familiar with this level of poverty in America. There are government programs for people who don't have what to eat, food stamps and things like that. A person's mamish hungry. Mamish doesn't have what to eat. Buy a candle. How to buy a candle? I have no money. Beg. Go knocking door to door. That's what the Rambam says. Why? Because it's the mitzvah of Onek Shabbos. 25 prakim later, and with this we'll close, even though we're like two lines into an 8-page piece. So we'll, all right, I guess we'll go into this tomorrow again. The Rambam writes, 30th parak of Shabbos. B'tzaruch l'saken beisam mibod yom. You have to prepare your house before Shabbos, clean up, do things like that. Mipnei kvod haShabbos. Okay, so that's cleaning the house. It's not candles. V'yihi ner daluk v'shulchan aruch l'mitam utzas shekol elu l'kavod Shabbos. That you should have a candle lit. Why should you have candle lit? Because that's kavod Shabbos. So two different places. The Rambam describes lighting candles as a mitzvah of Onek Shabbos, and you have to spend all your money for it, and a mitzvah of Kavod Shabbos. So we'll try to get into tomorrow. Are you guys around tomorrow? No trip or anything? All right, so we'll try to get into tomorrow, maybe, is what's Kavod, what's Onek, what's the difference between them, and is Neir Shabbos both of them, and then maybe if we have time, we'll get into the idea of women who forget to light Neiros Shabbos. Okay, have a great day, everyone.